Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes a Spider-Man.
Mics are live, you can gather closer.
You're at the same time as the Stan Lee panel.
No, Stan's old news.
Everybody's met him already.
This panel's just us talking smack about Stan Lee.
Yeah, now. I've done a lot of smack.
I heard one time he was in the auditorium of some Vegas casino just eating pickles out of a jar.
That's disgusting.
Some guy.
Who eats pickles these days?
I mean, like,
who goes to Vegas?
Yeah.
That's very libelous.
Who it was.
Just hands a whole five at a time.
Someone pitched me an amazing webcomic idea about Stan Lee the other day. I'm trying to remember. I think it was my friend Chase that it would be amazing for someone to do a webcomic where the premise is that Stan Lee actually died 5 years ago at a comic convention.
And he just wheeled around.
And it's just been Weekend at Bernie's thing. Weekend at Bernie's, but it's over years of comic conventions.
We can do this because he's still technically alive. Yeah. It's not disrespectful.
He has a
dead.
We actually don't know his presentation still on. This episode's going to have to be massively edited if
what
something
if
terrible happens in the next few days.
What if he shows up? He's like,
I think I heard a thump.
Wait. He just knows when people are talking about
him. Yeah, he'll crash through the ceiling and he gets talking shit.
You're thinking of Beetlejuice. You say his name three
Stanley,
times.
Stanley.
And once again, We Talk Comics starts before the actual podcast starts.
That is tradition.
Did we just use all of our best material? Like,
yeah, we did. We got nothing left.
That's okay. I recorded all this part too. All right,
let's open it up to Q&A.
Everyone better have brought several questions.
At least five each.
Five each, yeah.
All right, it is late on Sunday at the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. I guarantee more people will download this episode than are present, but I really appreciate those who have turned up. Despite being at capacity in the
100,000 people that are coming to this convention.
There's at least six Kylo Rens out there.
we had to open up the wall and expand. We're also they are videoing this into the next room for those who didn't arrive on time.
Yeah, it's on closed circuit.
Also, it's just being played over the announcements for the main hall.
Yeah.
That's better than the actual announcements in the main hall.
Everybody keep moving along.
keep right, except pass. Are you doing announcements, or are you just loitering, hanging out?
I'm just kind of wondering to see what's happening.
We're doing a panel.
Where's the panel?
They're right here.
This is our combined
it's a
audience.
Full house. It's a full
it was a lottery.
We all have half a fan.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
it's not. It's not.
He couldn't
not,
see. There was someone tall standing in front of him.
It's not quantity, it's quality.
That's so nice.
Thank you for coming anyway, guys. Hey, it's our pleasure.
Thank you for coming.
Actually, yeah, if he sits down, we're increasing the audience by
We have a closet next year.
Yeah.
Over here.
That'll be full house.
My half of a fan.
Go out there.
Than yours.
We can pack a men's room. That's
our drawing.
I was
power.
In a very nice washroom last night.
That dude is very hospitable, but I'm not entirely sure who he was.
Me neither. But,
thanks,
Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
One of the programming team leads will put you in this big room.
So you.
This is your fault. Hello, come on in.
Wait, hold on.
Right.
It's
so
all turning around for us.
We've got another 20%.
I think they're lost.
So we
no,
know
no,
it.
They found where they need to be.
Yeah, we're just going to interview you guys now.
Yeah, no, this is about the fans.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Well, welcome to the We Talk Comics live panel. This is our third year at Calgary Expo doing this. We also did a couple at Edmonton Expo. And we do a regular podcast that comes out almost regularly. That we just talk comics on. We have everyone from Kickstarter level to industry pros who have been doing stuff for 30 years. We just love talking about comics, And no matter how many times Finn asked me what we're going to talk about on the panel, I wouldn't tell them what
because
we were doing.
You didn't know.
Because because I like to do the podcast like I like my jazz. I like to just riff.
You're lying.
So, my name is Keith. I am one of the co-hosts of We Talk Comics. And we're going to introduce ourselves starting on my left. I want you to introduce yourself. Say what kind of what got you into this mess. And your favorite breakfast cereal. Eric.
All right. My name's Eric Dick. I do a weekly webcomic, Slaughterhouse Slew, based out of Lethbridge, nonfiction about history and the weird people I meet down there and strange vegetables. What was the second part? Oh, how
breakfast
I got up
cereal.
Here. Oh, breakfast cereal. I don't eat cereal. I don't approve.
I guess also how you got here.
I was invited by Keith, but I've been trying to stick my face in a lot of places lately. And I had somebody come up to my table saying that they had seen me walking with my dog. And I don't live in Calgary, so I'm not sure.
It was the beard. They saw the beard and they were like...
That was the Eric Dick cosplayer.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I've seen many...
The rumpled cartoonist with the beard. Is.
There's actually some very good ones. You should be pleased with your brand, Eric.
It's taken years.
Yeah. My name is Finley Cullen. Just for reference, I'm an agender artist. Use the pronouns they, them. I work on a queer space opera called Crash and Burn. It's available online, and now we have print issues. Our debut is actually Calgary Comic Expo this year. There's also a soundtrack online and a lot of extra cool features. I got into this mess because my writer pressured me into joining panel one because she doesn't like to socialize. And so now every panel one event that I can get into, I'm usually into. I also have to say, probably my favorite breakfast cereal is Count Chocula, but it's purely an aesthetic choice.
Then stop Instagramming while people are talking.
aesthetic of the cereal or the box?
I'm retweeting the panel.
The whole, the box, the box. I mean, the cereal's kind of bland. Like, I don't want to actually eat it, but I want to look like I eat it.
It's just for posers and Instagram photos?
Yeah, it's for voguing, like impromptu modeling.
Cereal image is important.
She has two boxes under the table here.
It is. It's part of my brand.
My name is Jeff Martin. I'm a cartoonist from Edmonton. I have worked on a whole bunch of books now. My newest ones are Hockeypocalypse Season 3 and Where is Zog, which is coming out on heavymetal.com. I've also done Redcoats-ish for Renegade Arts Entertainment, as well as the Hockeypocalypse series and a webcomic called Heat, which is about space wrestlers. I'm here because Ben dragged me here.
Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, he was not confident about the audience he would draw. He was right.
But thanks.
Yeah. So yeah, we were just gonna be, you know, gonna just hang out at the booth anyway. So now we're just hanging out here.
It is you know, frustrating the amount of crossover Stan Lee fans and Ben Reinkel fans.
Yeah, it's just you know, they have a 1-2 and I'm 2.
That Venn diagram is a circle.
This is what breakfast are you eating, man?
Finn and I are really glad you're here. Thank you.
The one I probably eat the most is like Rice Krispies.
Why?
Because I feel like that way I'm being at least slightly healthy. As far as like cereal standards go.
No, it's just bland.
That's so wrong.
I'm fine with that.
I'm just worried about your brand.
Brand.
I like the Rice Krispies talk back to you. I like that part.
All my parents are like,
I don't like an aggressive cereal.
My name is Ben Rankel. I am a comic book artist and writer. I'm working on a book called Frank. It's coming out late 2017 from Renegade Arts Entertainment. Pretty excited to be here. I'm here because Keith sent me a DM.
That's awesome. Yeah, I got a DM too.
He dropped the notes in my DM.
I just came to meet Ben.
And favorite breakfast cereal is not a Raisin Bran. It is Honey Nut Cheerios, so equally boring.
So quit posting Raisin Bran on the internet.
Yeah, they're all tweeting.
All right. I'm Chris, also a co-host of We Talk Comics. And my favorite breakfast cereal is American Fruity Pebbles.
Ooh, classic.
Canadian Fruity Pebbles suck. They're just reflavored, reshaped fruit loops. We get ripped up up here. That's all I have to say about that.
There's a look of indignation on every face in this room.
To say about that.
His new book is coming out on.
We may have time to do every audience member's favorite cereal.
All right, by applause. Cornflakes?
No, you have to pick one of our favorite cereals, and we'll sort you into teams.
You now have to.
Like Hogwarts.
It's like Team Cap, Team Iron Man. We got to do.
I'll give you a sample since you said we could.
Breakfast cereal, Civil War. All
right.
Yeah.
Let's start with the Rebel pilot here.
Breakfast cereal?
Yeah.
I don't generally eat it, but what do you do?
None of the above.
I like Vector, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow,
right.
Sporty.
Sporty.
I'm not a sporty person. I just like it.
But you can feel sporty when you
eat
breakfast.
Yeah, that is, I pretend like I'm a sporty person.
You just
you're so like, this is like working out.
Sporty.
Yeah.
As I say, as I sit on the couch watching TV.
Yeah.
Kyle?
I
gotta go with the aesthetic Count Chocula.
Oh.
It is the emo cereal of choice. Yeah, that's right.
Everyone's.
Alright, you in the chocolate shirt.
I gotta go with Reese's Puffs.
Oh you are a little Reese's Puff!
I changed my answer to Reese's Puffs.
You just want me to get it. That's my fan.
Yeah, they're all your fans. Baby Trent's got my back.
We'll see.
She's shaking his head.
That's the hill you're dying on, Ben.
Yeah.
On that Cheerios.
All right.
I love the number of people on the stage who said that they came here because of peer pressure.
Yeah.
I think that's good. That's what I like to encourage in comics.
That's how things
really
get done in comics.
We're like
it's a community of accountability.
That's a really positive spin. I like this.
Yeah, my next book is happening because I peer pressured my editor. So that is how things get done in comics.
Very nice.
That nepotism.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is this the editor that never came back from the hospital?
No, that was a different guy.
He actually did?
No, his back just doesn't work or something. I'm not sure on the details.
Let's get the story out of Jeff on the record here.
I'm sorry.
Now what all of our guests have in common, because I actually did plan some of this bit, is that all of the folks on the stage have worked in the webcomics space. Some are doing more in print. Ben's working on his first graphic novel, as he mentioned. And some are really just packaging some of the webcomics. So that's, I want to talk a little bit about the storytelling styles of webcomics, because it has different, very different requirements than a print comic. But now, first I want to get Jeff's heavy metal story. Jeff has a really great web comic available on the Heavy Metal website.
Yeah, it's called Where is Zog? I originally told Keith this story, I believe, while we were drinking last night.
I want to hear it sober.
So I ended up pitching a comic to Heavy Metal called Where is Zog? And originally I pitched it to Dan Berger, who was the managing editor at Heavy Metal at the time, and this was in early August of 2015. I just about forgot what year it was for a second there. And it took about 2 weeks. We sorted out all the details of how the project was going to work and what our expectations of each other were, and then he told me he was going to go in for some surgery, so sent him pages on September 1st, because he wouldn't be able to look at anything earlier than that anyway. So September 1st rolls around, I send him an email, don't hear anything for about 2 weeks, which is really unusual for him. He usually got back to me the same day. And then I saw an announcement on Bleeding Cool that Dan Berger has stepped down as managing editor of Heavy Metal because of medical issues. So that began a 2 month journey of figuring out who I was supposed to talk to at Heavy Metal now, because I had these finished pages and no idea who I was supposed to give them to. So eventually I got frustrated by how ineffectual my search for who to talk to was proving to be. And I just tweeted the Heavy Metal account and said, hey, I have these pages with a Dropbox link. Dan approved them, but now I don't know who to give them to.
Yeah.
And at that point, I discovered who my new editor was going to be. So now you can read Where is Zog on the Heavy Metal website.
It's all on Twitter.
Or just is
it
Dropbox?
That's
the Dropbox is still alive.
Down in the yes. is on Twitter.
I have a friend who's gotten like every pro job he's done almost off of Twitter.
Yeah.
And half of them by accident off of Twitter.
The last few comics and cartooning classes for kids I've done have at least 80% of kids have had Twitter parents. So they didn't know about the venue or the place the classes were taking place. They just followed me there, and they knew about it through Twitter.
Huh. Also, get well soon, Dan Berger.
Absolutely.
I hope your back works again.
Very sweet.
And I hope his back works again.
Well, I hope that part was genuine. Just thrown in as an aside at the end.
Also, I guess your back should work.
Yeah, I hear that's very important to being a person.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, though, that that much contact is done through Twitter. So in working in webcomics, how do you develop those kinds of social media ties with your audience to develop to, you know, either peer-to-peer or with the audience? Ben, what's your number one platform, social media platform?
That I like to use or that I think is worthwhile?
What's your most effective, and then, you know, and then what do you put on Snapchat after that?
No, Snapchat's just for naked pictures.
Yeah, we all know that.
It isn't just for that, Ben. We've seen your feed, but it's not supposed
Instagram
to be just for that.
Instagram I like the best. There's less bullshit. Twitter's become kind of this annoying quagmire of crap. That said, it is still where I made most of my connections with the people that I know in the industry now. That and actually going to cons. That's really the best way of meeting other people in the industry, attending cons. You don't need to table, just walk around and meet people. But Twitter's a good second option if you don't have, you know, thousands of dollars to spend traveling all over North America. So Twitter still serves that purpose for me too. I keep in contact with people. I still drop messages and stuff on there and talk about my work there. But I like Instagram the best. I like just being able to put the work itself out there, let people look at it, or pictures of my cat, and not have to interact with them. It's very one-sided. I used to be much more zealous about Twitter, and I've become completely the opposite in the last few years here. It seems ineffectual.
I have to agree at least on the fact that I find Twitter really exhausting, but at the same time really useful. There's a lot of professional stuff, and that is at the same time awesome because it's full of opportunities, but it's also like some days I just want to look at something stupid, and I don't really care that I'm missing 47 different networking events today.
If you're going to use Twitter, you know, you follow publishers, you find out who their editors are, you follow those folks, and then you make sure that your content is being tweeted out regularly so that it's not a bad place to build, like, you know, your little personal brand or whatever, but the people that are going to hire your serial brand. But it's better used if you're trying to find work with actually putting, you know, your work out there so people can find it and look at it. Tumblr is apparently really good for this as well. I don't know how to use Tumblr either.
Oh, man.
I went to use a Tumblr.
I went to a panel at Emerald City just for someone to tell me how Tumblr works.
Trying to talk to me.
Oh. I have a Tumblr, like a professional Tumblr and a personal Tumblr I try to keep separate. They're not super separate. It's not like there's anything terrible on my personal, but it's mostly garbage posts.
The big thing is there are editors out there looking at Twitter. I know a lot of
Finn's fans are nodding right now.
Yeah, no, they follow the Tumblr. But that's the thing, especially if you're doing
here.
Something. Tumblr is a great place to find an audience, especially if you're doing something with art, like comics, or something that is queer, because it has a lot of that demographic. It has a lot of young adults and a lot of just kind of disenfranchised groups. So for me, Tumblr has been very beneficial because it is kind of half interactive. Like, it's a place that you can build a community and let the community have your posts. The trick is trying not to get too involved in it yourself, I think.
Would you say, so I think we can all agree that Twitter is probably not the safest place for a vulnerable community. Would you say Tumblr's safer?
Tumblr has its own intra-community issues. It has a philosophy that wants to foster a very safe environment, but because the user base skews so young, they sometimes apply that in ways that are not as nuanced as they could be. So I would say on the whole, yes, it's very accepting, but there's a goal of like a homogeny of opinion.
So kind of, is it over-policed, is that what you, or over-self-policing?
I don't know if that's what I would call it, because I still, I think they have a very noble goal in mind, but I think that there is not a lot of room for nuance in it, so it's not necessarily that it's over-policed, but that on the one hand, when you're 13, you're going to send some people death threats, because that's just what 13-year-olds do on the internet, and so even if the person you're sending a death threat to is doing something that's actually really terrible, you still probably shouldn't be sending it, and there's not a lot of distinguishing between, I don't know, shades of like personal preference. For instance, we have a Kylo cosplayer, and I'm just going to use Kylo Ren as an example. He's an awful person. He's a terrible villain. And I think a lot of people who are fans of him are fans because he's terrible.
My garbage son.
Yes, exactly. He's garbage, and that's why you love him. And so there's a lot of people out there who are like, if you like him at all, you are any list of terrible things. You're either racist for not prioritizing the people of color in the cast enough, which is actually kind of a fair argument because on the whole, but not so much as a personal level. Like, when you can't find Finn or Rey merchandise in a store, when the entire fan fiction community is only writing Kylo Ren / Rey fix, that kind of thing, that ends up being a problem, but I don't think attacking individual people for liking a character is really the answer. And that's where I think the nuance falls through.
I think that's not just a Tumblr problem, though. That's an internet problem.
That's true.
Where
nuance is lost on the internet.
Well, extreme opinions are easier to
market.
Yeah. Well, they're easier to market, but they're also easier to
type.
Get
nice letters.
Think about to absorb.
Angry people just want to tweet real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, nuance
yeah,
opinion,
just
you
throw
have
out
to
there.
You
yeah.
have to think about and reason, and other people need to, you know, read it in an open-minded way for it
yeah.
to actually be effective. Whereas if you just have a very extreme opinion, you can just show crazy things
and just
other
toss
people
it out there. That's
be like, yeah, I'm gonna go along with that guy.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
They have to take responsibility for the things they say because they don't care.
Yeah, and I mean, if you are thoughtful enough to really think through your position on something, find the nuance in it, you might decide that your opinion is not that important and not post it.
I don't tweet as much anymore.
Yeah. So
I
tweet
a lot about hockey games.
That's great. I mean, like, that's the voice. Yeah, that's the other thing with Twitter is there's a lot of, and I'm going to pat myself on the back for this, white noise, but like white dudes saying a lot of things. So part of me scaling back using Twitter is just nobody really needs to hear another white dude's opinion on shit going on. So there's people out there that are going to say stuff better and more eloquently and from a better perspective than I will.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to let them say it, and you know, I can hit RT or hit the little heart.
Yeah, I like that too, because there's even...
It's not to say I can't have an opinion. I have lots. It's just I know there's going
to
be a bunch of other white dudes that aren't going to start and
share
themselves back.
I've very much been in that space too, Ben, of late. Like, I was asked a couple of days ago, what do you think about, you know, this comic kerfuffle that's going on with a company? Yeah, like, there's a company, there's a problem, what do you think about it? And I said, honestly, I haven't created that much of an opinion because there's literally no one, including myself, that is asking the question, what does the middle-aged white guy think about this? It's just not, like, no one's ever going to have, there's not going to be a panel about that.
You'll hear it already. You don't have to ask. Yeah.
So, I mean, at that point, I'm liberal enough, I don't even care what I think about on this subject.
I do think it's important, like you said, though, to find the people who are knowledgeable and boost that if you do have a platform.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There's people who can say it proper. There's, yeah, get their voices up, and mine can go down. You guys can hear anything about Carolyn.
I mean, I actually want to add just part of that nuance is that you will not be knowledgeable on every single issue. Like, I certainly can't speak on behalf of, like, Black Lives Matter. That's not my issue, but I definitely want to be boosting those voices. And I want to be finding those creators who are creating work that is more relevant to those topics. So,
if I find myself interested in a topic that I know my followers are interested in, but I'm not the person to speak to it, then the retweeting or the, hey guys, you need to go follow this person, they've got their thread of what they're discussing right now is really important, and then just turn it over to them.
I've also realized that it's not required that I have an opinion on everything.
Yeah.
Which is actually a...
You just keep it to yourself, right? Like, and that's an amazingly hard thing for white dudes to learn.
I don't know is actually a completely legitimate answer.
Yeah.
I can't wait to quietly reflect on
this. I'm not educated enough on this topic.
No, seriously, those are like the best tweets you can do now. Somebody calls you out on something, say, okay, I hadn't thought of that, I'm going to step back and think about it, thanks.
Yeah. Not only I mean,
how does this help you with web comics?
part of a web presence.
We're being more aware about the content that we're producing as well. Hopefully.
Yeah, I think with web comics you often get automatic feedback and it feels more accessible. Like when you're a creator who presents a finished product and people consume the finished product, it feels like a thing that's very separate from you. But when it's posted a chunk at a time online and when you clearly have an online presence, you're way more accessible. So I think that it's applicable that you, by necessity, have an online persona.
That feedback mechanism is so much faster than it ever was. Mm-hmm. And particularly if you're creating web content that's going out a page at a time or a couple of pages at a time. 20, 30 years ago, if you put out a comic and someone had a problem with it, it was 3 or 4 months before anyone would know. People would be off on other jobs, and then a bunch of letters would come in, and like, wow, people are really upset about that thing we did last January. But now it's, there can be, if there's a controversial comic that comes out, like, not even everyone has woken up on Wednesday morning before the think pieces have started and the opinions have been issued.
That gets us into a different area as well, though, which is the relationship between the critic and the artist. And I do think the critics, for whatever they exist as for comics are super important and their opinions are super important, but I'm not so sure I feel that they are entitled to immediate and direct feedback to them specifically. I don't think they're owed that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people on Twitter and Tumblr and Instagram feel they are owed that, but I don't think so. I think the relationship is more of one where the artist creates, puts it out there, and if they're going to go and find that criticism and take that back into their world and act upon it, that's fine, but I don't think they need to hop on Twitter and make public apologies and stuff like that. Even unless they did something publicly that's really shitty, then they probably should.
Yeah, but even part of that, too, is it doesn't even necessarily have to be, because you're getting smaller installments of content, they could have a problem with one panel. And it can blow up as much as an entire series.
I want to point out, too, that what you're describing can also be in the positive. I asked Dave Coverley about this, the single panel cartoonist speed bump. He's been in the game so long, he said that before that, writing, putting out and publishing a comic, just one strip in the newspaper, was like telling a joke and waiting 3 months for the audience to laugh. But now he gets that positive feedback too, not just the negative. The positive stuff comes right back.
Yeah, when I was doing that, that was like you put the post up and then you wait and you just sit there refreshing until something comes. That's almost your payment, is that little that little electric shock.
Endorphins.
You see somebody like actually give a crap about what you're doing.
Yeah.
For better or for worse.
Yeah, I run on that.
Yeah. Like that's what keeps you going doing that stuff.
Especially because making comics, whether you put them on web or not, is a very isolated experience. Mm-hmm. So
it's a lot of hours of work alone, working on the same thing that you've been planning for a while.
Yeah, so when you get that, you see those comments come in, you realize, like, okay, I'm actually doing this together with these people, mm-hmm. even though they're not involved in the process of creation, they're the reason why you were doing it to begin with.
Yeah.
And it's a very satisfying, feeling to actually make that connection with the audience. Whether they're, whether feedback is just like, oh, cool page, or there's some, like, either whether they have an issue, anything really is, it's like, okay, these people are out there and connecting with my work, and that was the point of doing the work to begin with.
Yeah, I recently found out that somebody that I don't know online put my art as their phone wallpaper, and I freaked out. I was like, that made my whole day.
It was like you found them, you took their phone, and you broke it apart, and you tried to find where your photo was.
Yeah, I flew across. No, they sent me a screenshot.
You didn't give me that.
They did ask. They
no,
asked.
No, I'm just... I think it'd be great even if they didn't ask.
I don't think they need to ask, but it's cute that they asked.
Because I do nonfiction stuff, there's real people in my comics, real stories, and in some cases I'm undertaking the telling of that story to the public for the first time. And one exciting thing that I get to see is I get to witness the sharing that the subject of that comic with the story that maybe they didn't have a means of telling it. They now have this comic that they are sharing with all of their friends or fans or even just their network. And to get to see them take ownership of the thing that I made in it, for them, but about them, and get to see, I can track the life of that throughout their community as well, which I find really valuable and that same kind of spark.
Ben, you mentioned the relationship of the critic and the artist. One of the challenges that I think all art, but we'll use comics as an example, is having right now is who is the critic? I mean, at this point, I can start a website for $10 a month and start publishing reviews. And you know, in not too long, I'm on Metacritic as a reviewer of movies.
I mean, you've heard me before. I probably ranted to you about the kind of lack of quality in comics criticism and journalism. But you know, that said, I've kind of been thinking about it, and you know, maybe it's just about artists and stuff trying to educate these people that are interested in talking about comics and giving them better language and teaching them to how to approach it instead of just ignoring them as you know, blogging comic writer wannabes, which is a lot of the times just dudes that want to write comics, and so that's where they start. But maybe if we're more helpful in giving them better language, we'll get better criticism. We also have, you know, some of the best critics out there run into this problem where people don't necessarily like what they're saying or don't like who's delivering it. Comics and Cola just shut down her site. She just got tons of abuse as a woman of Muslim faith who was trying to say things, and a bunch of people weren't jazzed on hearing that from her, so she kind of got sick and tired of that. And, you know, then we lose some quality stuff. So I don't know. It's weird, but I'm trying to be more open to the idea of not necessarily disliking the fact that just about anybody can hop on and give a hot take on something, but maybe try to help them understand and use better language and look at things more critically, and maybe there's a relationship in that way, if not in immediate and direct responses to what they write. I don't know. That answer your question, or is it going on my tangent?
It doesn't matter.
But really, if one of the other panelists could can riff on it, though.
Yeah, we're counting that as for us, by the way.
That was for me.
That's from the room with the Jumbotron.
All right, we've got some super talented comic book people here. I want to know what they're reading, other than their own books. Can you give us some recommendations?
Rat Queens.
On hiatus.
Rat Queens.
Still fantastic. You're right.
If you haven't read it, it's new to you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Rat Queens is great. I'm reading Hot Damn by Ryan Ferrier.
I just picked that up today.
Kendall Block Blues by him as well. He's one of the
writers.
Yeah. I like Saga.
She-Hulk.
Yeah. I could have said I like Saga because that's in my top two.
We can all like Saga. Everybody go up and buy Saga.
It's disingenuous to
me
like Saga.
Saga.
Yeah. You have to let someone else
say.
As
a comic fan and as an artist, I absolutely love Saga. My relationships to people that make the book notwithstanding. What else is good?
For those who don't know, Brian Vaughn is Ben's bestie.
Yeah, he's my and if you don't believe me, he tweeted it. Go find that.
Actually, I was at Emerald City Comic Con a little while ago, and I picked up an anthology comic called Death Saves that was really good. It was an anthology about RPGs and about, you know, that experience where your character dies for the first time. And it was actually really cool.
Star Slip is coming out monthly now. Saga is about the only monthly thing that I get that wasn't canceled. I guess Island is still a thing.
Yeah.
Island, I've enjoyed Island a lot.
I've loved Island, but I think he's reformatting it as well.
It's
a tough format. $8 or $9 an issue and anthology, so it's a hard sell.
And they were like 110 pages in perfect bound.
They're awesome.
Oh, they're beautiful. It's just,
yeah.
It's
I'm just saying,
it's the hardest point, yeah.
Keeping that comic sustained at that level is very difficult. But the stuff that's in it has been awesome. I read 2000 AD for a couple months. I'll catch up on that. I really wish something like that would catch on in North America, though. As much as I love the 2000 AD stuff, it's very British.
Mm-hmm.
And is the kind of thing that's not really going to catch on here. But the idea of a sci-fi anthology comic that can actually reach a mass audience and be providing work for that many creators and that many new ideas and stories is something that I think North American comics needs. 2000 AD I really like. I actually found an old Rogue Trooper omnibus. It's like the first 800 pages of Rogue Trooper that was ever produced. So I've mostly been working my way through that, but it's about the size of my torso. It's been taking a while.
Jeff, I'm kind of curious. Do you read 2000 AD like me by just skipping the Judge Dredd stuff and just trying to get into the ABC Warrior and other ones?
Judge Dredd stuff is really good.
Judge Dredd is amazing.
I just don't get the character. I
judge Dredd
have.
Is
I
just a satire of cops.
He's a judge.
Satire of American comics.
Yeah.
Really.
And also just, like, a satire of American police. Like, it's, yeah, I like Judge Dredd. But I do like a lot of the other 2008 properties. Like, I'd rather read Rogue Trooper or Strontium Dog than Judge Dredd, but I still love Judge Dredd. Ben, are you trying to spoon the microphone?
He's been cuddling it this whole time.
I've been considering putting it in my mouth.
Please don't.
I'm just wondering if anyone else is.
It is the last panel.
Yeah.
That means everyone on that microphone has already put it in their mouth.
That's the drama.
Well, then go ahead.
Happy
we'll see how it sounds.
Then what about you? You said Saga Rat Queens.
Saga Rat Queens. The next thing, because I just bought it, it just came out in English. It's a manga, but it's Princess Jellyfish. It's pretty old. It even has an anime. But.
I'm going through the omnibus and the Dark Horse release of Astro Boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also, not that new, but...
No, that's super awesome.
Yeah. Online, I guess I would plug Dinosaur Comics. I used to read Wondermark by David Malky as well. There's quite a few series, and I feel like I read them all at once, so I can't remember every title, but check my bookshelf.
Can you see the bookshelf on Instagram as well?
No, I don't have Instagram.
So,
no.
Finnsbookshelf.tumblr.com.
Yeah. that's my private account. I post my private bookshelf. I have Sunstone. That one's pretty good, but I've only read the first issue, so...
Sunstone's amazing.
It's very... It seems actually really realistic, which was...
Stefan Sijic is also a wizard.
Yeah, he's a very good artist.
And that's, yeah. So I'll just read anything he does because he's magical.
He did some variant covers in the latest Drag Queens volume, so... Anyway, pass this down the table.
I'm the odd one out here. Nonfiction is primarily my... interest. I recognize about three of the names that you guys said.
That's fine. I missed a lot of them. That's why your voice is valuable.
All right. Fair enough. I'm really excited about a lot of the nonfiction stuff coming out of the Cartoon Studies, James Sturm's school in Vermont. Some really amazing, sometimes historical, but sometimes even just books on philosophy and physics told through comics. I just find that really interesting. What I'm really excited about and have been for the last 5-6 years is Matt Bors out of the U.S. is an editorial cartoonist, but in panel, like not a single panel, but a multi-panel editorial cartoonist. He, through funding from Medium.com, ran something called the Nib.com, Nib, N-I-B, and it was... really a a column on Medium that was editorial cartoons, in most cases long form. And it was remarkable because he was initiating treating all of these cartoonists as journalists, so they were getting proper page payment for the work that they were doing, and so of course it went bankrupt and out of business.
But well, they're actually relaunching.
And that's really exciting. And so not just Matt Boers' own stuff, but everyone he is holding up and supporting, and the diversity and range, not just cultural diversity, but also political diversity. So he's posting stuff like J.J. McCullough, who, if they were in the room together, would strangle each other, but he values that voice, and so he is paying and giving J.J. a platform to post his work as well. So that's the kind of stuff I'm excited about right now.
If you're mostly into nonfiction stuff, how do you feel about
KB? It's okay, we got it. Even upside down.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, how do you feel about KB Moore's work? She does historical-based comics that are kind of fiction, and they're comedy.
I would say that Kate's work is, there's a direct line between that and me starting to share the stories that I was telling. I owe a lot of, I would say, my online presence to Kate's, not just her online persona, but how she conducts herself professionally online. I absolutely take a lot from that.
Yeah.
Kate, I think, is also really exciting because she is taking some remarkably dry content. And if you haven't read her stuff, there's lots of Canadian stuff, but also international history. And she managed to do, you know, some 12 comics on Lester B. Pearson, which is fantastic. And
they're actually funny.
But they're also get you fired up and going, now I need to go learn more about this stuff. In my comics as well, I do a lot. I do proper citation of my sources for things, whether it's an actual live person I talk to or it's text that I'm going back to. And I even heard several times this weekend of people who read something in the comic and then spent the next week trying to track down more information and read more stuff. So even if, like Kate, I'm being a smartass about the topic, I've plant enough seeds that people are excited to go find more about that. And anyone doing that in Canada right now, as far as I'm concerned, has everything to owe to Kate. Absolutely.
I'm going to, actually, because you're talking about biographical comics, I'm a huge fan of Seth. And I am excited because I found out there's 10 pages of Seth that was published in The Walrus online. So there's a whole new Seth short story that I have not read yet. The last time I read a Seth book, because it's about every year and a half, 2 years, something comes out. I finished it, but now it's so long before the next one. We've got a couple of minutes left. Do we have any questions? Right up front.
Got a couple of questions.
Bless you.
Thank you so much.
We were at the Geek Girls meetup on Friday night, and they were passing around posters for Frank, which looks awesome.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering a little bit about the creative process behind that and sort of how you came up with the idea, got started with it. Because, it looks super freaking cool, and your poster's in my bedroom.
Oh, thank you. That's I can't wait to tell my partner about that. Somebody put up my poster. I'm from Alberta, so my family lovely my son families in BC. When we were younger, we used to take trips through the Crowlands Pass, and you'd see all those hats on the front side, and you'd start to learn about it, and that always got me really excited, those kinds of stories, and that kind of desire and interest to hear and know more about stories in Alberta, stories from Alberta, but not necessarily just historically, but have more stories set here, that's been sort of my thing. And Alexander is the Finbo is the publisher at Renegade Arts Entertainment, which is where both myself and Jeff have our work. And we've known each other for a few years, and then last year he was like, hey, you got anything you want to work on? And I just dumped a whole ton of stories on him, and then got into the Frank stuff and just kept going for probably an hour. And then eventually he hung up on me and called me back 7 months later and was like, you want to do a story set there? So that's kind of where it came from, but mostly it's something similar to yourself, where it's just, I want people to tell more Canadian stories. I want people to set their stories here. I want people to be like, oh, you can actually tell a cool story set in Alberta, not New York or LA. And
Canada's interesting, but
we
because
are.
Most of our media is Americanized now,
yeah.
Canadians don't grow up believing that Canada's interesting. And that's a big problem.
It is a huge problem. And something that can be fixed by just getting people excited. So I'm not going to do what you did and actually cite all my sources, but I have done a fair bit of research. But it's not what I'm going for is accuracy.
People or just...
Yeah, I've actually... What I'm doing is a fictitious story set in the real-life events of Frank. So I'm trying to just tell a very exciting crime story, and it happens to be set somewhere here, so that hopefully, if I do it okay, a couple people will be like, I'm going to write a story and set it in Calgary, or I'm going to set it in Alberta, 100 mile house, you know, whatever. That's the idea, I guess, if I answered your question.
Yeah. If I can jump in,
yeah.
So I asked something similar, a similar question about the Canadian thing to Seth last year, and he made some comments about that maybe so the stories, that's important. His stories are set in Dominion, which is a city in Canada that doesn't exist, but it is very, very Canadian. But Seth himself is very Canadian, and there's something that comes through in that storytelling. So I think it's great because if someone else had parachuted in to tell the story of Frank, I don't think it would have been the same thing. I'm excited to see what you guys are doing because I think it's really important that it's you guys telling me.
Thanks, and you just made me think of something. I probably, the reason I thought this was a thing that could be done is probably from the Louis Riel book that Chester wrote.
Oh, yes.
Which isn't straight up historical. He takes some liberties and stuff, but it's interesting and it's an exciting story.
And it's also one-third handwritten footnotes. Just amazing. So, no pressure on you then.
I'll just put everything that I've ever swallowed.
Grocery
list. When I drove
through Crow's Nest
Pass, I went
to the DQ. I lived in the Maritimes for a little while. I would tell people the story of Frank and the slide, and straight up didn't believe me. I never had anyone believe me.
Just Google.
That it happened. That sounds.
You need to preface the story by telling a crazier story about goblins or something. And when you tell the Frank slide story, you downgrade.
And it's called Turtle Mountain. Sure.
Yeah.
People ask me, who's Frank Slide?
that sounds like a Ben. That's your follow up. That's a great hard boiled detective name, Frank Slide.
Frank Slide on the case.
Frank Slide PI. Amazing.
Yeah.
Just
someone's name.
Any more questions? Any more questions? Questions. We're just about to wrap up. Absolutely.
In terms of writing comics that are nonfiction based, do you consider yourself more a historian who writes comics or a comic creator who happens to focus on nonfiction?
I'm going to say a comic creator in part just because that's my voice, but I also am very aware that there are people who know this stuff better than I do. I have 4 panels to hopefully get you excited about a topic. I'm not going to be able to tell you everything. However, when we move to a city, I need to find out who the archivists are. I need to find out who the librarians are. I need to get them excited about what I'm doing because then I know they're going to come to me with stories. Label that I am careful with is journalist as well. I don't consider myself a journalist. I may be behaving in similar ways when I go out and find somebody or talk to somebody, but I also look to journalists for help or information or even editing. Historians, I have two, three historians in Lethbridge who are I vet things by. You know, is this really a thing? Three people have told me this. Is it really true? That sort of thing. So I would certainly be careful about presenting myself that way. And chances are you're going to read some interesting history stuff in my book and then turn the page and there's an animal poop joke. So I'm very aware of what I'm doing.
If we're on Twitter, how would that be?
Historical poop joke.
That's essentially what my book is about. I got this book because I used to be a social studies teacher and I have a history degree, but also I write a lot of poop jokes.
All right, we've got to wrap up. Starting from Ben, remind people how to find your stuff and how to give you money.
Just Google my name, Ben Rankle. You can't actually give me money for you yet, so, but I guess you could.
They can just mail you checks for no reason.
But if they put $20 away for your graphic novel now, it would accumulate interest.
Yeah, so then you can buy it
for the next year and a half.
In Christmas, holiday 2017.
Yeah, you could have $20 and maybe a Hershey Kiss by then, is interest.
Just one.
Okay. Just one.
Yeah. No wrappers.
On chocolate.
For me, it is @HeatComic on Twitter. You can also find Where Is Zog on HeavyMetal.com. And my other webcomic is @heat.underdogcomics.com. And I'm going to enter a picture from the other room that's for my website.
Yay! You got polite clapper.
Yeah.
You can find all my work online at cb-comic.com. There's a lot of cool extras and soundtrack, all kinds of things up there. There's also a link to the Tumblr. And if you want to tweet me personally, I'm @Kialest, K-H-I-A-L-E-S-T. I'm pretty sure that's how it's spelled.
You should have written that on the table for yourself.
I definitely should have.
EricDick.com, all the comics are posted there and on social media, but I also am operating a Patreon, and so you guys should be too.
Yes,
I am. So all my paper and ink is paid for at this point, but thank you very much.
All right, say goodbye, Chris, and then I'll wrap it up.
All right, that's it for We Talk Comics. You can find us at WeTalkPodcast.com. Lots of good shows, lots of different talent, different types of shows. That's it for me, Chris. We talk.
All right. Thanks so much for coming out. It's always great when we get people to turn up to a comic book panel at the Comic Expo. That's one of my personal joys. You have 55 minutes left to buy these folks comics at their tables. Make it happen. Thanks so much for coming out. Enjoy.
C04.
Finn and Eric are like two booths away from each other.
I have seen it this whole time.
Everything from all of us.
I've seen the booth across from me.
Yeah, same.
And enjoy the rest of the expo.